Oh. Pardon me, I have a show to do. Well, happy 2013. If you're worried about the 13, remember, the first 13 was Jesus's bar mitzvah. Okay, so what do you know?
Live from Jacksonville, Florida to San Francisco, California, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, and I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, White House correspondent Jake Tapper, all the news that isn't, and the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know is provided by PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who's working in the Wisconsin version of Les Mis, Les Not-So-Battables, it's Michael Feldman.
Not-So-Battables. Les Not-So-Battables. Okay. Or Les Could Be Worsibles. That's the Wisconsin version. Okay. Fine. How are you? Pretty good then, huh? Anyone been to Kentucky for New Year? Oh. How was that? What'd you do there?
I looked at miles of horse farm fences.
You looked at miles of horse what?
Farm fences.
Oh, the farm fences. Okay. Yeah. They're black, aren't they? They paint them black there in Kentucky.
Yes, they do.
Isn't that odd?
It is.
Okay. Don't say we never talk anymore. And anyhow, okay there. That's good. And in the news, all the news that isn't, Joe Biden holds a pistol to his head, drags himself out of NRA meeting saying, do something or the Veep gets it. Walmart comes around, agrees to everyday low ammo. Looks like the only gun restriction this year will be against David Gregory, host of Meet the High Capacity Clip. On NBC. In other news, anyway, Joe Biden will be inaugurated in Venezuela in lieu of Hugo Chavez. He's always there, Joe Biden. You know, whenever you need him, he's great. Russia offers Jerry Lewis citizenship after selling his cable network to the Kuwaitis. It's now Al Gore Jazeera. Okay. I'll give it an iffy little... Not a smiley face, but just one of them level ones like that. Lawyers on ice at the NHL opener. But you should see their enforcer. This guy is mean. The NRA says it's willing to trade rifles for drones. Some wiggle room there. Nobody makes it into the Baseball Hall of Fame, but the Steroid Hall of Fame is overflowing. AIG will sue the U.S. for saving its assets. And Rapunzel seeks injunction against the prince. That's a similar story, is what I'm trying to say. Like if Rapunzel, oh, never mind. Should have stayed with it, saving their assets. Note to self, save, stop at assets. Okay, FAA throws Dreamliner under Airbus. Well, thank you. If that was heartfelt, I mean, was it?
It was. I love a pun. There's nothing beats a pun.
No, nothing comes close. Let's see now. Man mistakenly drops $1 trillion coin in Salvation Army kettle. Had it in the same pocket as a half dollar he was going to give him. Most of Justin Bieber's problems come from his friendship with his pal, Little Blunts. Little Blunts, his pal, Justin Bieber's pal, Little Blunts. Justin Bieber smoking blunts. Come on. I'd love to see it. I'd pay good money for that. You know it's double bubble cigar, actually, what it is, double bubble cigar. It's pink, for God's sake. It's not a blunt. Where was I? His music has been getting more and more psychedelic. I can't help but notice. Justin Bieber. We were talking.
MC Hammer pants he's wearing, that's got him all.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's too short, really, for the MC
Hammer
pants. Okay. Looks like a Hummel when he wears. Okay, Django, mentioned for defense secretary. A very ugly nominee for the head of the CIA takes Paula Broadwell out of the equation. Okay, well, it's a little complicated. I could have that run off and take it home with you. In Sydney, kangaroo goes through airport security, has more than 3 3-ounce items in his pouch. The 40 billionth Apple app sold, 1,437 of which are in use. Quick percentage. Come on, people. Let's see. Yeah, oh, yeah, here's this one. 17 billion Earth-sized planets, and not one of them is good enough for her. Okay, well, you never know. Wisconsin's Walker and Syria's Assad make exactly the same speech. Modern parenting found to hinder brain development in modern parents. Okay, I'm landlord of the world's largest pot shop. If there's a problem with the renters, I go down and talk to the guys. Okay, that's an editorial. Fighting Irish prove they're ready for the Big Ten. Overqualified, I'd say. You know, in the BCS championship game, they only led in GPAs. Researchers find that we lose at games because we're not good at them. Curiosity Lander finds under the red planet, Mars is actually taupe. I got the pictures to prove it. You know, I think it's too hard. I'm a male. I don't know what taupe is, but I'll show it to you and you tell me what you think.
Sounds good.
Okay. Would you know taupe if you saw it?
I think so, yeah. It's okay. Somewhere between dun and straw, right?
Yeah, whatever those are. Between dung and what?
Dun and straw.
Oh. Between dung and straw is my life story, actually. Thanks for the title. Lance Armstrong leaves Oprah transfused. Fixed. I'm sorry, fixed. Turns out they called the Titanic Dreamliner, too. Oscar nominations are out. Lays pretty darn happies. At Les Miserables. Sally Field nominated for a role as the Flying Mary Todd in Lincoln. Lincoln got so many nominations, actually having the Oscars at Ford's Theater, which I think is nice. Argo, first time a cornstarch has been nominated for an Oscar. And The Life of Pi gets 3.1415926535897932384626433 nominations. And go Pack, beat those 48-99ers. That's all the news I did. Okay. I go now. I got places to be. Don't think I don't. You think I don't have places to be? I do. Jake Tapper's on the line with us from Washington, D.C., where we'd expect him to be, actually. And Jake, I was calling him the ABC's man in the White House there, but apparently he's made a little shift here, which maybe we can ask him about. And so I'm not supposed to say that anymore. I mentioned those three letters.
Don't do it.
Okay. And he's on the line with us from Washington, Jake Tapper. New book is called The Outpost. It's a great book, by the way. Jake, are you there?
I'm here.
Did you know you're at CNN now?
I just read a press release that said that.
Yeah. Did that come as a shock to you?
No. I'm very excited. I'm going to get my own show.
Got your own show. All right.
Yeah. We're going to call it What Do You Know?
That's more proper, I got to admit. That's good. Is it going to be a comedy quiz show sort of thing, or what's the format going to be?
I think it'll just be a general news show with a lot of politics, breaking news.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're still in the working stages.
Are you working with Ashley Banfield? Will she be a co-host? Or?
No, it'll just be me.
Just you? Okay.
Although maybe she'll lend me her glasses.
That's a good thing. So, Jake, where have you been?
That's funny.
Yeah, not even to you, I don't think. But that you did ask that to President Obama, and I thought I'd turn the tables on you there. But
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Do you want me to talk about gun violence, or do you want to ask where I've been the last 3 weeks?
The last 3 weeks, because I follow you on Twitter, and your tweets have been just sort of random, and you're watching TV, and you're...
Well, I'm between gigs right now. I'm no longer the ABC News White House correspondent, but my contract doesn't run out until after the inaugural, so that I can't start my CNN job until after then. So I feel like Ron Livingston in Office Space after he got hypnotized, kind of in a strange, serene place.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, actually, I think. But so you're going to miss all the inaugural stuff, and
yeah,
I guess you can't.
I've done it before, though.
Yeah. Did they cancel your press credentials and all that? Or?
Yep.
Will those expire?
No, they've been returned to the authorities.
Yeah. This is quite a bit. I mean, I'm a little. This, were you planning on this for a long time? It was kind of a shock because I look for you on the evening news there, and I'm sort of used to you being there.
I was my contract was up, and there was this opportunity. You know, basically, I could stay at the White House annoying Jay Carney for another 4 years. Or
good at it though.
I felt like I'm really good at annoying him.
Yeah.
Or I could try something new, and I wanted to try something new. And Jeff Zucker just took over CNN, and he's obviously a legend in the business. And I wanted to, you know, anchoring's fun. You do it.
Not really.
Yeah.
I drag my anchor quite a bit. But anyway.
I was looking, you know, but it's weird having been a journalist, part of the day-to-day and hour-to-hour conversation and news coverage. It's weird suddenly being on this planet of not covering anything. It's weird. This week I was forced to start my own Tumblr account because I don't have anywhere where I can write anything.
Mm-hmm. Kind of sad, but it'll pass. It'll pass. That feeling will pass.
Yeah, it's a first world problem.
Yeah. Did it feel at all odd you and Rush Limbaugh gave you a shout out?
It always feels weird when somebody partisan on the left or right praises my work just because I don't think of myself as aligned ideologically with either side.
Yeah.
So, you know, and a lot of times I think a lot of people praising are just happy that somebody's either taking it to one side or the other. They don't even care what the question is. Like, conservatives praised me when I talked to, when I asked President Obama where he'd been on gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really a question, from the right. They just were happy that somebody was challenging President Obama.
But didn't you ask him one time why he wasn't wearing a flag pin or something like that?
I asked him, this was during the primaries. You got a good memory. I think it was in Lorain, Ohio, and I asked him about the assaults on his patriotism the conservatives were going to make.
Mm-hmm.
This was before he'd even lost the Ohio primary. And I cited, I don't know if I cited the flag pin, but I cited a number of things that they were going to attack him on.
Mm-hmm.
And but it wasn't like I shared the view of the patriotism challenges. It was just, I was, you know, how are you going to respond when these challenges come, which they did. Too little effect.
But you called him out on smoking, too, didn't you, one time? I mean, you're pretty hard on the guy.
Well, this is really obscure. But, I didn't call him out on smoking. One time, this is back in the day when I was a congressional correspondent.
Oh.
And he had famously quit smoking, and I was covering the Senate. And, you know, one of the great things about covering Capitol Hill is they're all right there. All the policymakers are right there, and you can grab them in the hall. They can't escape you. In the White House, they can escape you quite easily.
Mm-hmm.
So he was there right outside the Senate chamber, and he reeked of cigarette smoke. And I asked his campaign about it. I just said he famously had, like, quit smoking on Oprah or something. And he smells like RJR and Nabisco. What's going on?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Not Nabisco, you mean Reynolds, right?
RJR Reynolds. Haven't they combined, though?
Probably the same parent company.
Yes, he didn't smell like vanilla wafers.
Yeah.
I agree. I agree with your assessment of that.
Okay. All right. I'm glad we got that out of the way. Your new book is The Outpost. This is an amazing book, Jake.
Thank you. We just got great news. One of the soldiers in the book, President Obama announced yesterday he's going to be awarding him with the Medal of Honor, which means so much to these guys.
Yeah.
To have one of their own recognized for how brave he was that day.
And who is that?
He's no longer in the Army. He was Staff Sergeant Clint Romichet. He now lives in North Dakota. Mm-hmm. A fascinating guy. And the basic story, the short story, is there's this outpost put in this impossible place, the bottom of three steep mountains, 40 right. miles from the Pakistan border. And it had been attacked, you know, relentlessly for 3.5 years. And then finally the big attack came, up to 400 Taliban. And the guys were sitting ducks in this fishbowl, and the Taliban killed 8 of the Americans, and they actually got inside the camp. And reporting on this, I have nightmares about it. I don't know how these guys dealt with it, but one of the guys, this guy Clint Romichet, Sergeant Romichet, he got together a squad of guys, and they said, we're going to take the camp back.
Yeah.
And he just pushed west and took over that side of the camp and routed the enemy. And it's he's an unbelievably brave guy, and he's an interesting guy. He comes from a Mormon family in California, and he was more suited for this kind of mission, I guess. Mm-hmm.
I see your guy Karzai is in D.C.
Yeah,
I guess
out.
They're turning it over to him, is what I understand. Is that your understanding?
I think that they're heading for the exits.
Heading for the
pretty
exits.
Pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what's so great about this book is that, first of all, it's very moving and really, you know, finally something about the guys who are over there fighting and what they're fighting for and what we're trying to do. That's part of what we don't know, even. It's never been really written about. Is it what the mission? It's never been determined exactly, has it, what the mission is in Afghanistan.
It's been confusing for a lot of people. Right. Now the mission is training the Afghan security forces, but at the time of the book, from 2006 to 2009, the goal was counterinsurgency, which basically means winning over the locals so that they will take the fight, or at least eject the enemy from their midst.
Yeah.
But by profiling this one camp, I was hopefully able to show how difficult it is to do that and what the difficulties exactly are, and as you say, who these men and women are and what their stories are.
Right. And this was in Nuristan, which is something that I think most of us don't know even exists.
It's a province that is, it's like the Afghanistan of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. It's its own distinct ethnic group. They are hostile to outsiders, and when they refer to outsiders, they're referring to Afghans. Mm-hmm. And it's where a lot of your listeners probably know The Man Who Would Be King takes place, the Rudyard Kipling novella and the film with Michael Caine and Sean Connery.
Right.
They're legendarily untamed. They were the last ones to convert to Islam in the 19th century, the first ones to take up arms against the Soviets in the 70s. And so when America pushes in there, I mean, this is a camp, Camp Combat Outpost Keating, which I write about, that literally there are 3 hollowed out Soviet personnel carriers outside the camp.
Yeah.
Not exactly a reassuring landmark.
No. Which sort of brings up the prequel to all this is that having seen what happened to the Russians regarding Afghanistan, what actually more or less changed their country after that. Russia was never the same after their Afghanistan experience. How is it possible that the U.S. went into Afghanistan on that sort of basis?
Is one thing,
yeah.
Because obviously they wanted to rout the Taliban and kill Al Qaeda, but the question of what to do then is really the challenge, and that's been the problem with the last decade there. What to do? How do you make sure it doesn't become a safe haven for terrorists again? And you're right. I mean, and there are a lot of troops pushing into Afghanistan in the book in 2006, 5 years after the war started, and then pushing into this east part of Afghanistan, right next to where the enemy actually is in that state whose name shall not be spoken, Pakistan. And these guys are not only aware of the Soviets and their excursions and problems there, but how difficult it was for the Greeks and Alexander the Great. And, you know, one of the lieutenants in the book, Ben Keating, who the camp is named after, tells a, a journalist there, you know, we're fighting against thousands of years of history here.
Right. Exactly. And the British, of course, the British experienced too before the Russians.
Yeah.
And then it certainly calls into question, like, not just the rationale for being there, but sort of the plans on the ground. You know, and you mentioned Joseph Heller at one point in there in Catch-22 and all that. There's a chapter in there that's entitled something like "This is not a good idea" or something. This whole thing is a bad idea.
This whole thing is a bad idea, right?
Yeah, and certainly, just looking at where that camp was placed, or they might have needed an outpost camp. Obviously, they probably did, but to put it in a valley that where it's vulnerable from three sides, basically.
And this is where the decisions of people in Washington D play a role, because one of the reasons they had to put the camp there. This is mountainous terrain, so it's either going to be on top of a mountain or at the bottom of a mountain. They couldn't put it on top of the mountain because in 2006, almost all the helicopters were in Iraq. So to resupply the camp, they couldn't rely on helicopters, so they had to rely on the road. And if you're going to put a camp next to a road, then you're going to be putting it at the bottom of a mountain.
Yeah.
And so when Rumsfeld and Bush did not send enough assets to Afghanistan, they were setting the conditions for situations like this.
Mm-hmm. And then these young men, you know, average age, what, 24, one of their jobs was not just the military part of it, but they had to sort of win the hearts and minds of the people and start these projects and so forth. And yet it's difficult to know how you would do that under these circumstances.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. I mean, we ask these young men and women, many of whom, you know, barely graduated high school, to be diplomats to this part of the world that doesn't want Western influences there at all. I mean, when they when they think of Western influences, they're thinking of Kabul. You know, they don't want the government of Afghanistan there,
right.
Much less Americans. I mean, when these guys set foot in 2006 in a lot of these towns and these hamlets, they thought they were the Soviets. The Afghans thought that these American soldiers were the Soviets who had just come back. 15 years later,
mm-hmm.
they'd never heard of 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And the way asking them to be diplomats, to be civil engineers, to be soldiers, an impossible task. And anyway, so working on this book for 2.5 years, it was. I think what I came away from, in addition to if you're going to send troops over there and make sure they have everything they need, was just how lucky we are as a country to have young men and women who are willing to do this, purportedly for you and me and the people listening to this show, for our safety.
Yeah, and yet this is almost the first book that really has talked about their mission there and what they're going through there, what they've gone through there, and the setting itself. Really, it hasn't been talked about at all. We certainly heard a lot about Vietnam during it, and that sort of changed the course of that war. And we've heard about Iraq, although not quite in the same way as Vietnam. But what have we heard about the war in Afghanistan?
Well, this is one of the reasons I wrote the book, because of my own shortcomings as a journalist. Mm-hmm. I had been covering the war in Afghanistan from the comfort of the North Lawn of the White House. But I didn't understand what our troops were doing over there. I didn't understand the mission other than what I read in the New York Times or what the Pentagon press secretary said from the podium. I didn't really understand. What does that mean? Counterinsurgency. How do you win people over other than throwing money at them?
Yeah.
And I kind of was just driven to write this book. It was actually serendipitous. I was in the hospital with my wife and my newborn son, Jack, and I looked up a day or two after he was born, and there was this report on this obscure outpost that had been overrun. And I didn't understand why the troops were there, why they would be placed in such a incredibly vulnerable place. Who they were, who the eight sons were. I was holding my son, hearing about eight sons that had been taken from us. Who were these people? Who was Justin Gallegos or Stephen Mace or the eight guys whose names showed up in the newspaper? And it just set me on this course to report it. And it's just been probably, without question, I should say, the most life-changing journalistic assignment ever. Just because... I'll speak only for myself. I think my coverage of the wars has been rather glib,
mm-hmm.
talking about this surge or that surge, 40,000, 10,000, McChrystal versus Obama, And it's much more serious than that.
Mm-hmm. And so much of it comes from the guys themselves and from their family and from, it comes from them, not from the high on up, whatever the plans are from the generals and such.
Yeah. And the soldiers got and their families got so invested in the book because they were so happy to have anybody listening to their stories and wanting to tell their stories that it became a project much bigger than me and my personal professional ambitions.
Mm-hmm. And there's also something about the guys who come home and how that has changed them. Did you find out much about that or what's going on with returning veterans from Afghanistan? And
yeah, they're having, a lot of these guys are now my friends, and a lot of them are gone through tough times. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are getting divorced, and a lot of them are, can't sleep. And it's difficult. I mean, in addition to post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury, it's just, they see their friends die. And, for these guys, the guys in Black Knight Troop 361 CAV, who were there during the October 3rd, 2009 attack, eight of their buddies died. Eight of their buddies were killed. And a lot of them still grapple with why. Why were they there? Because at the point that they were there, there were four different deployments that I go through from 2006 to 2009. But at the point that the guys from Black Knight Troop were there, the camp didn't really accomplish anything. It was, as their lieutenant colonel referred to it once, it was like a self-licking ice cream cone. It only existed unto itself. Its only purpose was its own defense. And the lieutenant colonel and the colonel had told McChrystal they wanted to close the camp. And a couple others, and McChrystal wouldn't let them because Karzai didn't want them to before the election. As well, there are some other reasons as well that I go into in the book. But it's kind of glib, you got 53 U.S. troops there, and he doesn't want to close the camp, at least partly because Karzai doesn't want him to before the election because it will signify weakness.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it is a great book. It's a great piece of writing, and it definitely needed to be written. And it's a real tribute to you that you did it, and did it so well. So it's The Outpost, an untold story of American valor. Is there anything along these lines coming up from you in the future? I know this is the first you did. I know you did the Jesse Ventura book, which is not quite the same thing.
Yeah, that was a little different.
So this was a little unexpected.
World Wrestling Federation.
Yeah, and then you did the thing on the vote fraud.
Although Jesse Ventura did serve, we should point out, in Subic Bay.
Yeah.
In the Philippines. Then I did the election book about the Florida recount. No, I'm going to take a break from reporting and focus on my CNN show. Although I'm really psyched that Sergeant Romache is going to be honored. And I talked to him yesterday. I mean, this is the thing about these guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I feel like this whole interview, I'm like, this isn't funny. But
No. It's not funny.
But so I talked to Clint yesterday, Sergeant Romache, and he doesn't want this award. He doesn't want the Medal of Honor. He doesn't think he did anything. He wants, he starts talking about the eight guys that they lost, the eight guys who were killed. That's all he wants to talk about. And they start talking about other guys that were brave that day who survived, Brad Larson and Tom Rasmussen and others. And it's just, that's who these guys are.
Yeah.
I live in a town where people are not particularly like that.
No.
In an industry where people are not particularly like that.
Right.
But these guys are, we're lucky that we have them.
Yeah. And the stories in this book are amazing, what they did for each other and what they tried to do for each other and what they tried to do really for the mission, So it's a terrific tribute to them, The Outpost. Thanks, Jake.
Thanks,
Great
Mark.
Talking to you. Good luck at CNN.
Thank you.
You're going to rip it up, I know. Jake Tapper. Untold Story of American Valor, Jake Tapper. It's on Little Brown. All right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, gentlemen. How was your New Year's? Pretty good, then? What'd you do?
I didn't do anything, really.
Nothing?
No.
Anybody do anything this year?
I don't
Jeff,
think so.
What did you do? You had a gig in Indiana? That's the way to say it.
Michigan or Indiana, he's not sure which.
Michigan or Indiana?
Somewhere near Lake Michigan.
Were the time zones shifting on you? That's how you know if it's Indiana. Yeah, okay. All right, there. All right, then. Let's bring in 2013 here, which is a number that makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Really?
Yeah.
2013.
I know, but it makes no sense to me.
Well, it doesn't have
to. I mean, you reach a certain point in your life. Does that, you know what I mean? You look at this number, 2013, that's a meaningless figure. Okay, I'll get used to it eventually, I'm sure.
That's really, that's deep.
Actually. It's deep. Yeah. I'm deeply profound.
But your question about the Soviets was actually really good, because I had thought about that, too. Like,
yeah. So. It actually destroyed the Soviet Union.
I kind of followed that whole war and was like, well, if they can't crush them with no restraints, then what are we going to do?
Yeah. Okay. What's are we going to bring
well,
in?
Well, this is
that
we have a like a little theme today.
We do?
So we got a couple.
Oh, good. I love it when you do themes.
Well, we got a couple of tunes from the jazz bassist Oscar Pettiford.
That's the theme?
Yeah, that's the theme. Oscar Pettiford compositions. Yeah. He played jazz bass.
I wouldn't have thought of that one myself.
No, you probably wouldn't. And cello too. Theme. Played jazz cello. And this first one, he recorded on cello, but...
Was this your idea or Jeff's?
This was Jeff's. No. It was mine. It was mine.
It was?
But this first one's called Monte Celli.
Cool.
Once again, it's Michael Feldman.
That's all right. Look at this here. You have good taste in guests. Jake Tapper is our nephew. Who would have thought he was anybody's nephew? Jake Tapper. Where is that? Who that? Who that? Back there? Yeah? Is that back from the Akiba Hebrew Academy days? Did you go to Akiba, too? Yeah. The pride of Akiba Hebrew. And you are?
Mark Cohen.
Yeah. And so he's your nephew, so he's?
My sister's stepson.
Sister's stepson. Okay. It worked out pretty good.
It did.
And you stay in touch with Jake a lot?
We stay in touch.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say a lot.
No. Okay, I guess that's about it then. Do you follow him on Twitter?
No.
He's very big about that. He's always boasting about how many people follow him on Twitter. That's a little much.
It could be I'm not on Twitter.
Have you thought about it? I'm on Twitter too, if you want to get on there.
No, I haven't thought about it.
Do you want to think about it? I can come back a little later.
Maybe later.
Okay, come back. I'll think about it. All right. Brenda Carpenter. How many pairs of socks do you own? I should go through these more carefully. Hard to say because none of them match anymore, so I couldn't give you a number, Brenda. Brendan. Oh, Brendan. Oh, you're Brenda?
Yep, I'm Brendan.
Oh, okay, how are you? Stand up, Brendan. Let's have a look at you here. Brendan, ladies and gentlemen, I apologize. Mea culpa. It looks like Brenda, though.
Yeah, I'm not a very good writer. Yeah.
Socks thing important to you?
My aunt has a lot of socks, so I was thinking of a question, and she's here, so I thought so.
Well, actually, you make the connection between your aunt's number of socks and my own. How many do you own, for example?
Not that many.
No. Okay. Do you have? I hear you have a lot of socks.
Yes, I do. 150 pair.
Oh. How many feet do you have?
Two.
Well, that leaves you a lot of options then.
But most of my socks are holiday socks.
You have holiday socks. Which holidays do you celebrate in socks?
Thanksgiving, Mother's Day, the major holidays. I have Packer socks, Brewer socks. I don't have Buck socks.
Arbor Day socks? Anything tree-like?
Harry Potter socks, though. Never worn.
How long have you been doing this? And are you under care of any sort?
I don't know, 25 years?
Yeah. But you pay for them and everything. You don't go out and...
No, I pay for them, yes. Okay. Yes, they're all legally mine.
All right. Have you ever other parts of clothing, other clothing things?
Yeah.
Okay. There's something you don't want to know, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get back to that maybe next year, this time. Thank you. And your name is?
My name's Judy.
Hi, Judy. Looks like Soren Degano, is that right? Yeah, okay, good. That's what I said, didn't I? You say it a little cuter than I do, but I'm pretty sure that's what I said, Soren Degano, right? What? What? Well, all right, say it again.
Soren Degano.
That's what I said. What?
Soren Degano, not Soren Degano.
Soren Degano.
Yes.
That's closer, right? Close. Still not right, right?
Yes, yes, it is.
Okay. And you're a student, it says here.
Yes, yes, I am.
What are you a student of?
School. It's obvious, isn't it?
Huh?
It's obvious, isn't it?
Yeah. This is not going well. Are you like this in school? You're a little outspoken, I guess you could say. That's good, though.
Okay.
Yeah. Now you're studying school, I know, but anything in school that you like more than other things?
Science, math, social studies. I can count 150 things I like more than. Yes.
But that's all school. You can't say you like those things more than school because that is school, right?
Well, no, not really.
Yeah. You actually like school, don't you? Admit it.
Well, yes. Everything besides word study.
Besides what study?
You study.
Me study?
Yes.
Well, I've just been insulted by a master. Soren Degano.
Oh, I don't want.
All right, don't hit me. Don't hit me. Don't hit me. You want to do a shout out to anybody at your school? What school do you go to?
Emerson.
Emerson. Is Lake and Palmer still with him? No, probably not. Anyone you want to just shout out there to a teacher or something like that? Because then you get extra credit, you know.
Hi.
Okay, so put it there. Nice to
meet you. Nice to meet you, too.
I'm surprised I got that far. Don't mess with her, I'll tell you that, because she'll put you in your place. An 18-year-old student here in Madison, Olin, asked me, how do you handle your alcohol? Well, if it's a mug, I usually grab that thing on the side there. Where's Olin? Oh, Olin's right there. Okay. I would have thought it was you, come to think of it. You know, can I get you? Yeah, I can get you. Okay, some big guys here surrounding you. Get you. How you doing?
Good, how are you?
All right, are you handling alcohol?
Somewhat, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you ask? Are you curious as to some tips I can give you?
Certainly. Do you have any tips for me?
My daughter is, well, she's 19 now. I have to steal alcohol from her, I noticed.
Having
a very depressing point in your life. You have to steal, you know, alcohol from your kids.
It's happened to me a couple times. Can't lie.
All right, I guess that's all we have to say about it then, right?
Certainly.
All right. So just drink sensibly.
Thank you. Responsibly.
And never binge.
Never binge.
Yes.
Somewhat.
Yes. Moderation in all your binging, please. All right, we're going to play the Why Do You Know quiz because that's what we do here. It's a quiz show, ostensibly. And if you don't do the quiz, then people say, wait a minute, isn't this a quiz show? Yes, it is. So here's your chance to win fabulous prizes. But first, we have to know who can. All right, this is your part. And cannot participate. Nice shirt, by the way.
Thank you.
I could wear that if you don't want it. What size is it?
Large.
Yeah, I do large now. And you are?
Lyle Staub.
Lyle Staub, would you do the honors, please? I'll give that to you.
The four disclaimers. The first disclaimer. All questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Number two, 40 degrees, thank you, global warming. Number three, persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones, trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. And number four, all opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
Well done. Very well done. A good man. All right. All right. All right, we're ready. All right. Let's see. Okay. Let's see the hands. You got more applause than I ever get. I really kind of resent that. And if you're interested in playing the, you're right here, and you've been to Kentucky. Come on, up here. How are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah. Since you're the only one who did anything for New Year's, apparently in our audience, you went all the way to Kentucky for New Year's.
Right, but we got stuck in a blizzard in Indiana.
Oh, let's hear about that. Come on up here then.
Okay.
All right, pretty good. Come on up here. I'll be glad to. If you give me one, I'll give you one. All right, have a seat if you would. Come on. I didn't even ask your name. It doesn't matter. But I will ask your name. Your name is?
Kathy.
Kathy, and are you from Kentucky originally? Or?
No, never lived there. Never want to live there.
Did you ever get there?
I've been there twice before.
Yeah, did you get there in spite of the blizzard? And...
Yes, we did. We got to spend one day with our relatives and had to head back.
Oh, my goodness. How long were you stuck in the storm?
Just an extra day and a half.
Well, that's not so bad then. Leave the engine running, you know, you're fine. No matter. Were you actually in the car during that time, or were you?
Well, we stopped before we had to drive in the blizzard.
Uh-huh.
We actually checked the weather forecast before we left this area. I'm from Cottage Grove.
Yeah.
And we checked about a half hour before we left, and we discovered that a blizzard was going to be coming right through where we were going to be driving. Mm-hmm. So we picked a spot south of the blizzard area to stop for the night.
And I like the way you say blizzard, though. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, well, see, we had just been through one here.
Yeah.
So we didn't have any desire to go through another one.
I mean, for Cottage Grove, there's lots of blizzards strike Cottage Grove. Yeah. You read about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Blizzard strikes Cottage Grove. That's,
yes, that's right. So.
But this was a bad one.
Oh, it was, and you know, those nice little colored pictures on the maps, mm-hmm. the weather maps, it was mm-hmm. wrong. And
no,
so
wrong colors?
The place that we stopped actually ended up right in the middle of the blizzard.
Oh, my God.
The worst part.
Yeah.
So.
Do you know where you were at that time? At that point?
Somewhere in Indiana. Shelbyville?
Was it?
Wait, no,
or
Shelbyville's
was it Michigan?
In Kentucky. No, no, it was Indiana.
It was?
Yeah.
Did you see a bass player in his van down there?
No, we didn't.
No.
We,
you're in Shelbyville?
No, actually, I think that's in Kentucky.
Oh,
sorry.
That's in Kentucky. I know somebody lives there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I forgot where we were.
Yeah, the sign was probably covered with snow anyway.
Right. We were about an hour and a half south of Indianapolis.
So did you have supplies, and did you have, like, in the trunk, you got flares, and you got your snowshoes?
We stopped at the hotel just before the blizzard started.
Uh-huh.
And then during the blizzard, they send out warnings to shut down all the businesses except for the McDonald's right next to the hotel, which is really convenient.
That worked out.
We sent our 13-year-old girl, daughter, out into the blizzard to get us food. She wanted to go. We wanted her to go.
Yeah. This is a family trip you'll think about for years. Tell your therapist about
it. Have you ever been stuck in a hotel room with two teenage girls?
Yes, but I really can't talk about it. Okay. But you got there and you had a wonderful, and then you turned around and came back. And
that's right. We spent about 36 hours there.
Yeah, which is long enough with some people.
Yeah, in Kentucky, that's as long as you need.
We'll hear from Kentucky about that. But I'm sure. Kathy Sumpfer plays along with you. How does that happen?
If people want to play Sarah the quiz, Michael Feldman, if people want to play the quiz, they're going to pick up the phone and dial 1-800-942-5669. And you're going to ask them a qualifying question.
Okay, I got it. 30 seconds is probably out, but what will 1 second of the Super Bowl cost you in terms of commercial time? Okay. So within how many thousands?
500,000? I don't know.
That's a little much.
It's a little too much.
Yeah, yeah.
Within 100,000?
No. Well, you know.
Within 50,000.
All right. That's okay. So that'll do it for me. 1 second of Super Bowl time based on 30-second rates for commercials. In the Super Bowl, what will 1 second cost you? Vinny in Mount Vernon?
Oh no.
Hi, Vinny in Mount Vernon.
Hi. I'm the first caller, though.
You are.
The first caller never gets a chance.
Take it easy, Vinny.
Oh, no.
Your pressure, Vinny.
But I'm a nerd, too. I don't even watch sports.
Are you sitting down, Vinny? Just take it easy.
I am sitting down. I have to sit down.
Pour yourself a glass of water.
I cannot believe I'm the first
And
call.
Drink the whole thing while standing on one foot, and you'll calm down. Are you okay?
Okay. I'm okay now. I'm doing all right.
How are you?
I'm great. We got halfway sunny sky here in Mount Vernon, and I'm getting ready to go over to the historical village and do some blacksmithing. And
oh, there you go.
I'm just having a great day. How's your day, Michael?
Well, I was just going to do the same thing. I was going to do some blacksmithing over at the historical village as soon as I get out of here, and then it's good, and it's sunny out.
It's kind of sunny. We've seen the sun off and on.
It's off and on. Okay, is it off or on now?
It's off, on, off, off, off.
Let me ask you this then, Vinny. If I were to tell you that it would cost a certain number of dollars for a second of commercial time on the Super Bowl, would you be able to identify that number?
The Super Bowl is the last football of the year, right? Football game of the year.
This is going to be a problem.
You did give him some clues with the
margin.
Oh,
wait a minute. That's that one that comes on, and it's on all the networks, and okay, I got you. Cool. All right, we're good. No, I'm kidding you. Okay. Super Bowl.
All right, let me ask you this, Vinny. If I said $127,000 for 1 second of airtime, would you think I was nuts?
Wow, that sounds like a pretty good estimate. It really does. Yes, I think you would be right.
You're right, I am. And I'm nuts, too. It pays to be a sports fan, Vinny.
From nerds everywhere, Michael, we appreciate the break, okay?
There's a soft spot in my heart for blacksmiths. Always has been. I don't know why.
Nerd blacksmiths. We're not the geek blacksmiths. The geek blacksmiths are actually socially adequate. I'm a nerd, though.
Yeah. Well, you're not in it for the glory. You're in it for the whatever you're in it for.
You know, blacksmithing is its own reward. It really is.
Okay. Vinny, this is Kathy.
Hi.
Hi, Kathy. How are you?
Fine. I survived a blizzard.
What did you have?
No, we were fine. She survived a blizzard, and we just can't get past it, unfortunately. And the two of you are going to be your team now, and we have various categories, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Sarah Nix?
They are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school, science, or odds and ends.
Okay, Vinny, you pick the first category. What would you like?
Got to go with science.
Science? Okay.
But I'm a musician, an artist. I don't know anything.
But you were stuck in a blizzard. The large quasar group, or the LQG as I like to call it, the largest thing anywhere is a large quasar group. It's a collection of galaxies and stuff, I guess. I want to know how big it is. It's the largest thing seen anywhere. Is it 3 billion light years long, 4 billion light years long, or 5 billion light years long?
Wow.
Large quasar group.
Are you asking Vinny or me?
Both of you work together. Yeah, this is
I think he's obviously asking you.
Yeah. No, talk.
Oh. Okay.
Well, he's looking right at you, is he not?
Well, I'm still recovering from the blizzard. So.
I know you are.
Yeah.
That was pretty recent, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Two in a week I had to go through.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, that is really far away, and I don't think anybody's ever going to get there or care. So
you're not really asked to do an editorial on it. I just want to know that 3, 4, or 5 billion light years in length.
But on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, they get to talk about their answers.
You mentioned the blizzard several times. I gave you that.
I'm thinking they gave us that close to choices, so we ought to pick the middle one.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yes, that's right. 4 billion light years. Holy cow, Vinny. What insight. That would be
one right and zero wrong.
Okay, what's left there? Is there an X?
Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school, or odds and ends.
Kathy, pick one of those.
Things you should have learned in school.
School, okay. Juxtapose something.
What?
Juxtapose something.
Yeah, juxtapose something for me.
Interject or to inject it into a sentence. Yeah?
Just do it. Kathy's here. She can do it. Juxtapose something for me.
Juxtapose
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
Well, if I went over to that map that you have over here, uh-huh. I could put Nebraska on top of, let's say, Illinois, and that would be juxtaposing Nebraska on Illinois.
Oh. Vinny, you agree with that?
Kathy's all over this. Yes.
All right, yeah, that's juxtaposing. Learn it. Use it in graduate school. It's required. And
that's two right and zero wrong.
Okay, what's left there then, Sarah?
Current events, people, places, or odds and ends.
Odds and ends then, huh? Vinny, what do you think?
Current events, geez, no. Odds and ends, what was the other one?
People or places.
People's kind of survey results, places are kind of places.
I'm going to go with odds and ends, Kathy. What do you think?
I think so. I don't know anything about current events.
And I don't know that many people.
After stepping out of the shower, you are about 1 pound lighter, 1 pound heavier, or it's a wash.
You got to be heavier because you got all the water on you, yeah?
I think so.
Maybe
you have to
stay
balance.
Out of this, Vinny.
Maybe that you have to balance that out with all the dead skin you just lost.
Don't overthink this, Kathy. You're still suffering from blizzard trauma, you know.
Well, you know, I'm a balding middle-aged man, and so I lose a lot of hair. Okay.
Hear it from the mirror every day.
Well, you put the hair with the skin cells, and
okay.
There's a lot going on there. You got to admit it.
So you're saying 1 pound heavier, right? Is that what you're saying?
How much? 1 pound?
Yes.
Wow, it sounds like a lot. Water weighs. Yeah, I'd go with that.
All right, good. Go with that. You win the quiz. Holy cow! They've won the quiz. Holy cow, there's no time to go any further with this, but we're very excited for you.
We are.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. And could I put a plug in for our local museum just real quick?
Yeah, go right ahead. Plenty of time.
Cedarhurst Museum. It's amazing here in Mount Vernon,
Mount
guys.
Vernon?
And yes, Cedarhurst right here in Mount Vernon.
Cedarhurst.
Yes, sir.
That's the plug?
That is our museum.
Okay, you just mentioned it. It wasn't really a plug, though.
What did they win,
Sarah Nix?
Kathy, you can cheer your favorite team to victory tonight wearing a genuine, authentic, certified Green Bay Packers cap from the Green Bay Packers. Vinny, although the holiday season has come and gone, these great coffees will keep you in the jolly spirit. That's hot buttered rum, tiramisu, and gingerbread, precision roasted in Madison by Stephen Brew Coffee. That's coffee done right. And each of you will revel in the joys of calling an 800 number to get technical help from a computer in the fast-paced card game called Tech Support from Kenzer & Company, and learn all about life itself from What Do You Know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know by Michael Feldman from Bristol Park Books. Congratulations to you both.
Why, well
thank
done,
you.
My
dear. Wow,
thank you, guys. Hang on there, buddy. Make sure you get that. Don't go anywhere.
Pick up the perfect gift for your favorite fan of What Do You Know at notmuch.com. Click on Shop to get to the What Do You Know store and browse through Michael's books, games, apparel, and more. It's all at notmuch.com. Tickets are still available for our next What Do You Know shows in Madison on January 19th, January 26th, February 2nd, and February 9th at the Monona Terrace.
Not available.
Tickets are limited for our next road show at the Shower Center in Hartford, Wisconsin. So
Shower
get
Center.
Yours today at notmuch.com.
Sounds good. Hard to find there, huh? They're They're going like hotcakes at the shower center.
Apparently, they are going like hotcakes at the shower center.
All the truckers go to the shower center and all that. Are we still on, or have I lost this job? I'm okay? Okay. This is where the band just plays something.
That's right, yeah.
I love these moments.
Rest, relax.
Yeah. Vinny should relax. Vinny's still on the line.
He did well.
He did well.
Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI, Public Radio International, Michael Feldman, Producer International. This is PRI, Public Radio International.
A lot of international.
Live from the Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, and I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, we get to the bottom of the Boeing 787 Dreamliner. Thanks for the memos and more of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who got a life grouch instead of a life coach, it's Michael Feldman.
Okay. Well, you know, each week at this time, we read actual memos sent in by actual listeners. That's my pseudo-professional voice. I don't do it often, but I like to once in a while. Feral. It's feral cats, right?
Feral cats.
I always say that. I always say feral cats. And say,
feral.
And the audience
cats.
Shouts corrections at the same time. Feral cats.
Feral.
All right, someone wrote in saying that I said something about feral cats. Maybe I did. Matt Gaffney, Michael mentioned our nation is plagued by groups of roving feral cats. I don't know if he's right or wrong, but on general principles, I'd kill a cat just as soon as look at it. Matt, you got to look at your general principles, man. They're filthy. However, that's not why I'm writing. There's a collective noun for groups of cats. It's a clowder of cats. You know that?
How's that spelled?
Clowder, like chowder, with an L.
Now
and you can make chowder from cats, too, as a matter of fact, if you're Matt Gaffney, apparently. A clowder of cats. There are a couple other such collective nouns for cats, but clowder seems to be the oldest and most popular. Some collective nouns are quite imaginative and amusing. For example, a group of owls known as a parliament of owls.
Huh.
Matt, you're just a font of... of a group, collective nouns. You're a font of collective nouns. But speaking of feral... this is a memo here of Feral Hogs' Last Supper, Saturday. And it reads, I don't understand this at all, but let's see if we can get through this. After witnessing firsthand the Feral Hogs' Last Lunch Saturday, I want all of you managers to speak to departmental employees about the new rules that will be implemented during this Saturday for lunch. Saturday, I ordered 5 pizzas like I normally do and went to Cops to buy some lunch meats like I normally do. When I got back, the 5 pizzas had been delivered and put on the table in the service management, even before the plates, napkins, and general cleanliness had taken place, or the manager in charge said, come and get it. The feral hogs took it upon themselves to completely devour all of the pizzas. So, naturally, when I arrived to set up all the lunch stuff, half of it was already gone, which is completely ridiculous. A bunch of exclamation points. I'm not even going to bother to count them. So from now on, lunch will only be served when the manager in charge says, come and get it, not before. The manager in charge will be one of the following, names deleted. No one, and I mean no one, is allowed to touch any article of lunch food until this happens. The feral hogs this last Saturday appeared to be the parts department. The regular techs and the cleanup and prep department techs. So managers, please make sure to speak to all your employees about this so everyone understands. If this continues, I will shoot, gut, and make into bacon any feral hog left in the vicinity of the Saturday lunch table, and I like bacon. Thank you for listening, service director. There you have it. Good use of memo. Good use of memo. Very effective.
That was a little unsettling.
Yes.
Not if you're a feral hog.
I think particularly especially if you are a feral hog.
Yes, well, of course it would be. But, you know, he knows the audience he's trying to reach.
I guess so.
Say that for him. So they send these letters or memos or any place?
Yeah, they can send them to whatdoyouknow@wpr.org if they're digital, subject line memos. Or if you want to mail them in, you can send them to 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Care of What Do You Know? Thanks for the memos.
What if they want to reach you in particular?
They can also use
Sarah
that.
Sarah Nix.
They can also use that address. Shall I read it again?
Should they put you on there, care of
yep.
Sarah Nix?
Yep.
N-I-C-S?
That's correct.
Yeah. Skin backwards? Is that how you remember it?
Well, there's no K, so no.
Skin.
Yes, with a C, though, which wouldn't mean anything. It might be a collective noun, though, for something.
Yes. How do you spell skin? It's not S-C-I-N?
No.
Oh, I'm surprised. Shocked to hear you say that. Sarah Nix. Okay, so that's where you send all those things. And now a new feature on the show that we're never going to do again, like all our new features. You've yet to have a new feature that's stuck. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I have noticed that. Although I like to call me maybe.
Yeah, well, we'll use it again, maybe.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe not. Well, let's play the theme then for this new segment. This is Beneath the Plant. Girl, to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone. It goes out to you, Sarah Nix. Yes, it's time once again for Beneath the Planet of All the News That Isn't, Dreamliner edition. You know, I tend to skim the news and get out of it as quickly as possible, but sometimes it pays to look a little more closely at a news item or article or an event. In this case, we're looking at the 787, Boeing 787 Dreamliner. It's had some problems lately. FAA is grounding all of them. So if you're wondering why you're not leaving the gate, that's the reason. And where do we go? We go to Boeing itself. This is Colleen Rainbolt. She's in the division of Boeing that's called Passenger Satisfaction and Revenue, explaining the thinking that went into the Dreamliner.
Now, there's so many great passenger experiences inside the plane. Is there a backstory on how Boeing got the insights to make the spacious gangway, the entry and latches and things like that?
Oh, definitely. We've done a great deal of work from a psychological perspective to really understand what our passengers' needs are and then to be able to put those things into the cabin of the airplane. There are really two major elements that we've been focusing on. The first one is we learn through a great deal of research, and we know because we're humans that for as far back as anyone can remember, people have been fascinated by the idea of flying. What we wanted to do inside the cabin of our 787 and all of our products, really, is to reconnect the passenger to that flying experience. Okay. So many of the features that you see here inside the cabin, like the blue sky lighting overhead, the really big windows without a window shade, those features are there to remind the passenger that they're taking part in this experience that they would describe as being magical, something that they're fascinated by. The other thing that we're doing is we've learned through all this research and understanding from a psychological perspective that we really want to welcome people to the airplane, because when you welcome people to a new space, it creates a psychological break between one event and the next event that's going to follow. When people get to the boarding door of the airplane, we use this dramatic entryway and the compression of the jetway and the height of the cabin in the entryway to give an architectural welcome to the airplane to help passengers be ready to focus on the flying experience and be able to forget about however long their journey has been up to the point when they get to the boarding door of the airplane.
Right. That's very interesting.
Yeah. Ting. Interesting. He was going to say it. But he thought of something else. That, by the way, was Shawshank Negrum from Simply Flying of Singapore, CEO of Simply Flying. And they're one of the first to get the Dreamliner. So to recap, psychological, and because we're humans, we know a lot of these things to be true. The magical feelings about flying, as opposed to the reality of it, and the going from the compression into the expansion. So Boeing thought about this because they're very psychological. They have a whole department there called Psychological and Revenue. the idea of flying versus the reality of flying and magical and no shades, I think, is an innovation. I think it's going to set Boeing apart from the Airbus 350. No shades. So no hope of getting any sleep on this magical experience with the bright blue skies in your eyes and the no shades. And, that's pretty much it. There you have it, Beneath the Planet. Of all news that isn't, Dreamliner edition. Thank you very much. No word yet on why they don't fly. Well, it's psychological.
Not to mention electrical.
Electrical, psychological. Same. Because we are human.
Yeah.
And we know that.
We are electrical too, so yes. It all ties in.
We are psychological humans, and we know that.
I almost teared up during her little thing.
She was very good, yeah, I thought. She's actually very quite good. Okay, I'm looking forward to my first Dreamliner. What about you?
Not really.
Yeah, no. Okay. Anyone been on a Dreamliner yet? I don't know. There's a few of them that have managed to get off the ground. Okay. Look forward to that.
Like you said, they call the Titanic the Dreamliner of the seas.
That's right.
Lordy.
That's right. All right, so I think we're about ready to hear the second edition.
Oscar Pettiford tune.
Oscar Pettiford. Do we know anything about Oscar Pettiford that we could fill in some? I'm sure Jeff does.
He's one of the original bebop bass players. And
I didn't know that. Who did he bebop with?
All kinds of people. Thelonious Monk.
No kidding. I had no idea.
Coleman Hawkins. Sonny Rollins.
Oh, man, everybody.
Kenny Dorham, yeah.
So he was like the man. And for
he was really the man. He was one of the original.
Pettiford.
Pettiford, yeah.
Yeah. You know where the Pettifords hail from?
Well, he hailed from Oklahoma, actually. I think he's part American Indian, Native American.
Yeah. Cherokee, maybe, Oklahoma?
Choctaw, I think.
Choctaw, yeah. Cool. So and this did he write the first song we heard? Did he write that?
He co-wrote that with somebody. That was
a great song, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah.
That was really cool. Yeah. Why are you thanking me? You wrote it.
Oh, yeah.
You played it good.
We played it, though.
No, you played it very good.
It was a nice tune. Yeah.
Yeah, very good. And then this one coming up is?
This one is a little more well-known in jazz circles. It's called Blues in the Closet.
Blues in the Closet.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds good. John and Jeff, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's Michael Feldman.
Do that thing, will you? You doing that thing? Mr. What is that, green again?
Mint colored.
Mint colored?
Yep. Mint colored.
What do you think, mint? Can he wear mint or not? Oh, okay, good. Not many guys can. That's all I'm saying. If you say he can, then he can. You think it looks good on him?
Looks great.
Looks great. Thank you. Mint. Did you pick that out or did your wife pick that out?
Mother-in-law
picked that out for you. She knew you would look great in that mint green there. Light mint green.
Yes.
Kind of fluorescent. Okay, Gordon Govier. How close was that? Huh?
Not close enough.
What, you call yourself Govier?
Yeah.
Oh, no, come on. It's French, man. It's got Govier is not French.
My ancestors came to Wisconsin from England.
Well, yeah, there's a Frenchman in a woodpile, though.
It's quite possible. It's quite possible.
Like all the English. That's why they have a problem with the French, because they basically are.
I've heard.
And the French hate themselves. It's a well-known fact. French can't stand themselves.
I believe it.
English just picked up on that. And your internet editor for InterVarsity.
Yes.
Well, InterVarsity is?
InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. They have their national office here in Madison.
Yeah. Any Jews in that?
My vice president, who is in charge of our department, is Andrew Ginsberg.
Really? Is he an ex or is he current?
I think
Ginsberg or current?
Ex. He's currently a Ginsberg, yes.
And your question, Gordon Govier.
Is it safe to ice fish on Lake Monona?
There you go. They're out there. There's a tournament or something. There's an ice fishing tournament, and you see that the tip-ups there are floating. They're float-ups. They're floating up now instead of tipping up. I wouldn't go out there now, you know?
I saw open water, so I was worried.
Yeah, and today's the big tournament, too. Anyone here going to that big tournament? That big ice fish? Anyone here ice fish? Are you an ice fisherman?
I am not.
Why do you ask then?
I just saw him driving in, and I was wondering.
Oh, you were concerned.
Yeah, I was concerned.
Okay. Let's see. Thank you very much, Gordon Govier. Come on, we must have an ice fisherman or woman here. Can we talk about ice conditions here? Lyle's in charge of, you know, one of his jobs is he works at the, he woke you up, sorry, Lyle. What are you doing there? What are you doing back there?
Me.
Yeah, Lyle? No, not you, Lyle. The other Lyle. Hi, Lyle. We have a Lyle Anderson back there. Right? Answers the phones and stuff. Your microphone doesn't work. We use it once a year and it doesn't work. Lyle, the ice conditions. How are the ice conditions on Lake Monona right now in terms of the fishermen? Are they catching frozen fish out there or not?
Well, they better not be on the regular lake, but there are still a few on Monona Bay.
The regular lake? What is the regular lake?
You know, the main part of the lake.
Oh, on Mendota or Monona?
Monona.
All right.
Mendota is still not frozen.
Mendota.
Although I did see some shanties out in the northern part yesterday.
I saw a guy out there today on Monona standing on the regular part of the lake. I thought he was crazy. But
maybe he was floating.
No, he looked like he might
soon
be floating.
Floating shoes. So, I'm looking for it because he works for the weather department, among other things, there, or whatever that's called, right?
State climatology office.
Yeah, and you say when the ice is in, when the ice is out, right?
Yes, we determine, we keep a record of that.
And when they wash up, then it's your fault.
Exactly.
So then, are you saying go out there and fish or not?
No, I wouldn't in a million years.
Okay. There you have it from the state climatologist office. But it's a big deal. But it's not that deep. If you stay close to shore, you only sink like 3 feet. So, okay. If you want to try it, it's okay. Why would you drive 1,000 miles to run around a muddy field wearing a perfectly good bicycle? That's you? Stand up here. Mike's back?
Yeah.
That one right, finally, after all these years. They're over there if you want to say that. How are you?
I'm good.
Is this what you do, or what is this?
Yeah, well, cyclocross nationals are going on down in Verona.
What?
Yeah, well, that's running around. Yeah, that's...
Shouldn't you be there?
I done my race. And it's a filthy mess out there right now. And,
oh.
Yeah.
You did your race already?
I did my race...
John, you all right? You're sneezing into your elbow there pretty hard. You okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Heimlich!
No.
That's not for sneezing.
Yeah. Later.
What were you saying now? What was your race like?
My race was nice and clean and frozen and terrifying. And after that, it all got muddy, and boy, they're getting filthy out there. People should check it out.
So it's not just the ice fishing, it's the biking out there, right?
Yeah, and the big boys and girls go Sunday.
Yeah. Okay. Well, who are the big ones?
Oh, Katie Compton, Ryan Trebone, Jeremy Powers, a few of those.
Name dropper. You're such a name dropper.
Yeah. Well, that's those people.
And what is the title, or what do you win? What's the first prize?
Well, they're going after national championships, and Worlds are going to be here in 3 weeks down in Louisville. Oh. And that's going to be big because all the Europeans are coming over.
Yeah.
And there'll be lots of beer drinking, lots of bell ringing, and making a lot of noise.
You don't drink before you get on that thing, do you?
Not officially.
You gotta stop every 100 feet then, you know.
Probably help.
Yeah.
You know, I think, beer and heckling is good.
Yeah. How did you do?
I achieved some goals. I stayed upright. Didn't hit the ground, and beat some people I wanted to beat, but did about as well as I usually do, like 15th.
Though. Congratulations.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Right. He's the man. That's Mike Speck from Golden, Colorado. Tom Selk, semi-retired. In playing baseball, why does it take longer to get from second to third than it takes to get between any other bases? Tom Selk wants to know, from Ashwaubenon. First time Selk from Ashwaubenon. Identify yourself, Tom Selk. Do you know the answer to this, or I'm not coming over there? Okay, all right. It's a long walk if you don't know the answer. So now what you're saying, Tom Selk from Ashwaubenon, is that, how are you?
Great.
Good. So are you a ball player?
Yes, I was.
What'd you play?
Pitcher.
You're a pitcher?
Yeah.
So you never had to run the bases, really?
That's correct.
Hardly ever? But you know this, okay. Now you're saying that it takes longer to get from second...
It takes longer to get between second and third than any other base. And why?
Why is that? The Earth's curvature?
There's a short stop in between.
And you got to go around them. You got to go around the guy. Holy cow. What does he win for that, Sarah Nix?
Well, how about an extra long-tailed T-shirt to avoid plumber's butt with aplomb? And display the popular What Do You Know logo as well from the Duluth Trading Company.
So you win that just for actually contributing to
Thank
the show.
You.
Thank you. Some actual knowledge crept in there. I wish I would have thought of that.
Who are you rooting for tonight in tonight's football game?
Joshua, are you serious? You're from Wanakee and you're asking me, where's Joshua? Lamp. Are you serious? You're asking me?
Never know.
Oh, you're a pretty big guy. Sit down. It's okay. It's all right. I know, you're just being ironic, right? Huh?
Yeah, no,
can you crouch? Can you just crouch a little bit when you talk to me?
Maybe just
don't crouch, it makes you look like you're about to spring at me.
Like I'm about to pounce. Like,
play football yourself, Joshua?
You know what, I didn't. My brothers did, but I did not.
You didn't want to go out for
it? No, I was more of a basketball or work.
So. Yeah, okay. All right. Are you serious about this question, though, Joshua?
Yeah, you know, I heard there was some 49er fans in Wisconsin, so you never know. I don't know.
Met one. Is there one here? There better not be. Oh! Hey, you can take him, man. You got 50 pounds on him.
I don't know. You never know. It's always the smaller ones. They.
Line up and let's see what happens. All right, Joshua, they're going to beat him because it's a revenge game. Revenge. Good to see you, man. I'm coming in. What do you do to stay so fit? Mary Heft asks me from Rice Lake, what do you do to stay so fit? You obviously don't eat the donuts. Mary, what do you do in terms of your eye checkups? It just so happens we have an optometrist here, Kathy Stavenberg from Green Bay. Where's Kathy? That's you?
Yes, but I'm not an optometrist. I'm an optometric tech.
Even better. She's an optometric tech. They're a lot cheaper than optometrists. Trust me. So if you could just examine her eyes, exactly, because she thinks I'm unbelievably fit.
I'd agree.
Check that cough, though, would you? That's a little... thank you, though. Thank you for being understated or something, or overstated, or missed... You? Really? Both of you? You think I'm cute as well?
Yeah, sure.
That's what I usually get in terms of the cuteness factor, but that's nice of you. Handy.
Well deserved.
Thank you so much. Whew, contact. Contact. All right. Kosher cheeseburger, I don't know. If you can find a halal cheeseburger, then you got a kosher cheeseburger. So look at it that way. And here, we got to get this. Okay, we have another bike racer here. Lewis Gatch, age 11, Cincinnati, Ohio. We want to get you, because we heard one bike racer. Are you here to race?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Let's find out about this. This is cool. Yeah, come on down here, because it's easier than my stepping on their feet, because she likes me. How are you?
Good.
So are you in a race coming up?
Well, my race was yesterday.
Oh, how'd it go?
It went pretty well.
Did you see this guy out here, the guy who was on before?
No, but there's a lot of people.
Yeah. Do you race, they race in age categories as well, or?
Yeah, they race in juniors, 10 to 12s, and 13, 14s.
Yeah. And which one are you in?
I'm in the 10-12 group.
10 to 12? And how'd you do?
I got 19th, so pretty good.
Excellent. And what were you riding? What were you riding out there, Lewis? What's your ride?
A bike.
Give me a name and give me some numbers and things and tube tire sizes and stuff like that.
Well, mud tubular wheel tire thingies. So they're extra grippy on the mud. And then a 26-inch wheeled bike.
Any brand name there you want to push here and get endorsement, you know?
Scatto bike.
Scatto bike?
Belgium.
Yeah.
Lionheart's junior racing team based out of Cincinnati, Ohio.
Good man. Congratulations. We have something for you. What do we have for our bike winner here?
Well, how about a set of colorful juggling balls since he's clearly coordinated already?
Juggling balls.
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's your next big endeavor. Nice to have you here, Lewis. Catch from Cincinnati. We're going to play another round of the What Do You Know quiz because, I don't know,
we
got to do something, right? It's airtime. It's precious, I know, so why not do a quiz, I say. Now, you saw how it went first time. Went pretty good. Did a good job once you got past the blizzard. And so let's see the hands of those of you who think, gosh darn it, I could do that. That's the easy thing for, I can do it. And, I, you know, it's the kind of thing where I, you seem like you really are into this. You, okay, all right, all right. I couldn't help but notice, you're hard to ignore. Because something about you says, I got this.
I think I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Why do you say that? Are you just, have you done other kind of quiz contest things?
No, not at all.
No.
No.
You just know a lot of stuff?
No, not in particular.
So you're living, you're delusional is what you say.
Maybe a bit.
Perfect.
And you are?
Avery.
Avery. And what are you doing these days, Avery? In school?
Yes.
And whereabouts?
In Madison.
Okay. More than that?
Cherokee Middle School.
Cherokee Middle School. Avery. Yeah, I'll give you one good reason you should do this, Avery.
I am excited and somewhat confident in this and my answers.
It's like Miss America, so it's not a complicated question. Come on, Avery, come on down here. Walk this way, or you can walk any way you want. You don't have to walk this way. Have a step right up there, Avery. Join us there in the seat. All right. I bet you're pretty good in school, though, too, huh?
I believe I'm doing all right.
You believe you are?
Yeah.
Do you just believe it, or is it true?
I'm doing all right in
you
school.
You are? Yeah. What are you doing best in?
What?
Are you taking any for that attention disorder? You got it? Avery, I mean, in school, what's your favorite subject?
I like music class.
Oh, you do? Okay, cool. What do you play?
I play the cello.
Oh, you do? Why didn't you say so, Avery?
I didn't.
You didn't. Did you bring your axe with you?
No, that's a lot of stuff to carry around.
Yeah. How long have you been playing the cello?
About 3 years.
Yeah. Did you have a knack for it right off the bat? Could you tell it you could play that thing?
A little bit.
A little bit?
It spoke to me.
It spoke to you?
It
huh?
did. It did, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, that's very sweet. That's cool. And now you think you might go on and play the cello? Or?
Yes.
Oh, how cool.
Check out Oscar Pettiford.
Oscar Pettiford, yes. Okay. Avery, and any subjects besides that, in case you have something to fall back on, you know?
I like English.
Oh, yeah. Are you a reader?
Yes.
Yeah, what are you reading now?
I am reading Tom Sawyer, actually.
You are? Oh. Okay. How is it?
It's enjoyable. Amusing.
Good. It is a comedy, I think, pretty much.
It is.
If it's not amusing, then you're probably missing something there. And little Becky. Becky's in that, right? His girlfriend, Becky. All right, Avery, sit out there. We'll play along with you. And, you know, it's a general knowledge quiz. Are you familiar with the quiz?
Somewhat. Like, last time.
Were you ever stuck in a blizzard? Let me ask you that. Okay. So you've never heard the show before, really?
I've been in the car with my parents listening to it.
Okay, so you've never heard it.
I've listened to it.
Yeah, but you never heard it. Come on, there's things in your ears, right, the whole time. There's not, you're not listening.
I have ears. They listen. They don't comprehend.
Yeah, but you have things in your ear, you know, like plugs and things and
sure.
listening.
You could consider that.
Okay, Avery, someone up there plays along with you. And how do they get to play along with Avery? Sorry, Nix.
They pick up the phone and dial 1-800-942-5669, and then you're going to ask them a qualifying question.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thank you so much for mm-hmm. telling me that, mm-hmm. because I have one right here. All right, you know, America may be English first, but Americans speak at least how many languages around the house? This is a national total number of languages spoken in the U.S. In households. So within how many languages?
I have to say I don't understand the question.
Well, it's really not your place to say that, is it?
Within two.
No, what I'm saying is that English, you know, English first year a lot of time, but the fact is we are a polyglot of languages. United States, many languages, many, many, are spoken in the U.S. I want to know roughly how many languages are spoken
gotcha.
In American
okay.
households.
Oh, within 150. There are a lot of languages on the planet.
Okay, within 150, right. We need to talk about this part of the show a little more, I think.
I'm not so good with numbers, I got to tell you.
No, no, you're very good with numbers. Okay. So we want to know how many languages are spoken in American households, basically, total number of languages that are spoken by Americans. All righty, let's go to the phones right now. Ben's on the line there in Kansas City. Hey, Ben.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you guys?
Pretty good. Yourself? Oh, I asked you that already. Okay.
Yeah.
What you
cold
got
up? Here.
What?
Cold.
It's cold there?
Yeah, it's going to snow.
No kidding, because then it's coming here after you.
I think that's the wrong direction.
No, it goes to Kansas City first. And if it plays in Kansas City, then we get it. Day or two later. Yeah. What you got planned today? Anything big?
I just got done doing what I needed to do. Most of the days, just hanging out now.
What did you need to do?
Oh, just bid some jobs. I work construction and got to bid jobs on the weekends.
Oh, you went out and bid some jobs?
Yep.
Now you're going to kick back, drink lots of beers in the garage, and watch football?
Oh, no football. My team didn't make it this year. I don't know if y'all heard, but the Kansas City not doing it, so I didn't get to it.
Oh, no, I didn't know you had a team. Well, that's good, though, isn't it? Then we got a team.
Well, yeah, it's good to have a day off.
Anything is possible. You get a coach or something like that, you'll be in business.
Yeah.
How many languages spoken around America? Total number, within 150.
Within 150?
Yeah.
Well, that gives me a 300-point swing. I'll go with 150.
That's good, because there's 300 languages. You are so smart, Ben. No wonder you can bid those jobs. Holy cow.
Fantastic.
You must be good at bidding jobs and stuff. You must get it right on the what you have to bid, right?
Well, if I got that big a swing, I can pretty much bid anywhere.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And still make money on it, right?
Yeah.
Ben Avery, she's middle school, and plays the cello, reads a lot, and is a very good student.
Well, she sounds smart. We should have an easy time.
Okay. Ben Avery.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello.
Okay. All right. And let's go to the with categories now.
Right.
Sarah Nix.
The categories are current events.
How many do we have within how many?
don't make me count. Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying
Watch
attention.
Watch that one.
Science, yeah. Odds and ends. I think that's six.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just worried about number three, I guess. But. All right. So then, let's... Right. Okay. So then I ask the questions then, don't I?
Well, they have to choose a category
yes,
first.
Yes, of course. Yeah. I know how to do this for years.
So now you ask them.
I'm not having a moment. I really am not. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just feeling silly. Ben, you want to pick the first one? What would you like? Of those categories.
Let's do odds and ends.
Odds and ends could be anything. Yes, it is. Okay. If it's calories you're looking to burn, should you take one stair or two at a time?
What do you think, Avery?
Well, maybe one, because... You take more steps. It's like more steps at a small amount of time.
You're so smart.
Less motion. Yeah, I'm good with one step.
All right, one step at a time.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Was I whispering? Yes, one step at a time. You actually burn more calories. 302 calories to 260. So smart. She is smart. And that would be?
That's one right and zero wrong.
Oh, excellent. Okay, what's left there?
Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school or science.
Okay. Avery?
Ooh. Well, since I'm in school, things I haven't learned in school yet, maybe?
Okay.
Or should have learned in school.
Paraphernalia. Oh boy. Don't explain why you have it. Spell it.
Paraphernalia? Isn't that more like, what's the word?
Paraphernalia. Paraphernalia. Meaning any sort of apparatus. Not necessarily that kind.
Well, I hope you can do this. I'm not much of a speller.
Paraphernalia.
Paraphernalia.
Is it pronounced correctly? I think it starts with a P.
Okay, that's one out of the way.
And then I'm going to lean towards an A. Paraphernalia?
Paraphernalia.
Phrenalia.
Paraphernalia.
Okay. Any other pronunciations?
Country of origin.
Paraphernalia.
So P-A-R-A. Mm-hmm. And then P-H or F. I'm not sure. Ben?
We'll go with the P-H.
Any ideas?
Jump in any time here, Ben, if you want.
Go with the P-H.
P-H, okay.
All right, P-H. Paraphernalia.
Phrenalia.
All right, so R.
Okay, cool. That's a tough one.
A.
Friend.
Phrenalia.
Paraphernalia. So E.
E. E-N, is that what you said?
Yeah, E-N, E-N.
Parafriend.
Can't forget about that.
Parafriend, now we just need the alia.
I.
What, alia?
Alia.
A-I.
A-L-I-A. A-L-I-A.
Yes! Holy!
Good job.
Nice job sounding
that
out.
That was impressive.
Hey, teaching the sound out, apparently. Still in doing.
Yeah.
So that would be
that right out.
That's two right and zero wrong.
I know she'd get that.
Yeah.
Okay. That ever comes up, you're in business.
All right. Spelling tests.
Yeah. What's left there?
Current events, yeah. People, places, or science.
Okay. Ben?
Current events, please.
Current events are out of the news, maybe not. What does Brent Musburger think of Miss Alabama?
Do you know anything about this?
I don't know nothing
you don't
about
know
that at all.
Thank God she doesn't know from Brent Musburger.
So, Ben? Yeah.
The only thing I know is there's somebody dating a Miss Alabama. Is he the one? Is he dating her?
In his dreams, he is.
Oh, I shoot.
Well, she's dating the quarterback there.
So what is that?
Yeah.
AJ, whatever his name is.
What exactly are you asking? What's
well,
the question?
What I'm asking is simply this. What does Brent Musburger think of Miss Alabama? He's made the news, actually, for thinking something about her.
News.
And I was just wondering what it was. That was the news.
Does he think she's pretty?
We can accept that. Yes, he likes her. He thinks
right.
She's darn pretty. He just kept going on about it. And it was inappropriate. At a certain point.
Sounded more like a sports question.
Well, you know, Musburger, he's at the point. He doesn't. The married man's credo, you know. See, but don't say. He doesn't get that. All right, so that they won the quiz. They could quit here, wouldn't they?
They could, or they could risk it all and get two more correct questions.
We're just going to do the one because I'm happier with that now.
Okay.
Then we'll just make it a one-fer. You know, it's a little more dramatic.
Okay. Well, then one more correct question to win the mother load.
Well, let's go back to the two. Let's go back to the two question.
Really, two?
No.
Michael, here's my question for you. Would you like it to be one question or two?
We're doing the one question because it's a one-fer, then it's a little more dramatic.
Okay, great.
I think. Yes. So, in other words, they could stop here and they won some, you know.
Some good stuff.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. But if they went on for the
mother load
mm-hmm. and get this question right,
they would win a bunch more stuff. It'd be great.
We'll double your order, actually. But wait, there's more.
You get two. prizes.
Yeah, you get two things that suck out your ears instead of one. Anyone get that, by the way, you know, a little ear vacuum? Did you get it, sir?
Not me.
Are you happy with it? Huh? Haven't used it yet, huh? Okay, clean those out and then get back to me. All right. So they got to get one. They got to get this one right.
Yes.
Do you want to do
right.
it?
So basically, if we get one question, and if we get it right, we get the mother load.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if we don't get this right, we lose everything.
Yes.
Yes.
I like the way you.
Well, what do you think?
That.
Clarifying. Ben, any ideas?
Clarifying.
I've always been a gambler. Let's go for it.
All right. We'll go for it.
She's very good. I'd like to work for you someday when you're in a position of authority and power.
Thank you.
I'd like a job with you.
Thank you.
Okay. So what is it then? What's left then among these?
People, places, or science.
People, places, or science?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. People, places, or science.
Places
every one
or
of
science.
These is people is kind of like survey results. Places are kind of like places, and science is, as the name implies.
Places sound kind of straightforward.
You think so, huh?
I think so.
Okay. Well, there's a lesson in that, too. Okay, winning Japanese politicians often wave one of the following. Do they wave a fish, a baby, or a single chopstick?
What?
You said that almost at the same time. That's cute. Let me rephrase that.
A fish, a baby, or a single chopstick?
Let me start again here. Winning Japanese politicians often wave, in celebration of their win, one of the following. Do they wave a fish, a baby, or a chopstick? Pretty straightforward, huh?
Oh, yeah, very.
I would think a baby would be kind of dangerous to wave around.
But... Okay.
Well, where would they even get the baby, is my question.
Babies all over the place. They're always throwing babies at pushing babies at politicians. They could easily wave one if they wanted to.
Fish and chopsticks are pretty popular, both.
Fish. Do they eat a lot of fish in Japan, was it?
Oh, do they?
Yeah, sushi.
Yeah, I think they do.
Oh, lots of fish in Japan.
And chopsticks seem a little too straightforward.
Yeah, good. I like that. So we eliminated what, chopstick and baby?
That only leaves one left. But.
So you're saying they might wave or hold up a fish?
People throw fish. Don't they? In like markets?
They throw fish, don't they? I like that too. Yes, in Seattle they do.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Yeah.
We went there.
Yeah.
Did you? We cool. saw that.
Yeah. Same fish, too. There's one fish all these years. They don't want to ruin any more fish. They keep throwing that same one. It's 10 years old, 15 years old, that fish.
So, Ben, chopsticks or
big old salmon.
Fish?
You're saying they wave a fish to celebrate? Possibly because of the word Thai fish is a pun for celebration?
Sure.
Is that what you're saying?
Okay. How about fish?
Yeah.
Fish is right. Oh!
Avery adds style and taste to your snowy front yard with a pair of fantastic plastic flamingos arrayed in Green Bay Packer green and gold from Pink Ink. And then unleash your inner gall with Charles Timoney's, pardon my French, words and phrases epitomizing French
ben
culture.
Ben doesn't want those, though. He's a Chiefs fan.
And used only by native speakers. Well, he's not getting them. These are for Avery.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Unlock the meaning of the words with no English equivalents, like Drachenfutter and Rasblioto, with Christopher Moore's...
I'm sorry. Could you say that to me again?
Drachenfutter.
Could you say it like... Kind of say it softer?
Drachenfutter.
Thank you.
And the name of the book, by the way, is In Other Words, A Language Lover's Guide to the Most Intriguing Words Around the World from Levenger Press. And load up on mazurkas, polonaise, etude, and prelude on the CD What Do You Know About Chopin? With consumptive freeliner notes by Michael Feldman on Nimbus Records. Ben, you've won the bathroom reader to end all bathroom readers. What do you know? Test your knowledge of the ultimate trivia with a collection of trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know by Michael Feldman from Bristol Park Books. Then keep laughing with a t-shirt from the Baby Boomer Comedy Show, clean comedy for people born before seatbelts, safety helmets, and Facebook, from Kent Rader Speaks. Write down your thoughts in an array of hues using a multicolored pen from the Venona Terrace Community and Convention Center, and while away the remaining winter nights playing What Do You Know the Party Game from Out of the Box Publishing, including the irrepressible Michael Feldman bobblehead, available exclusively at notmuch.com. Congratulations to you both.
Can't repress a bobblehead. Avery, nice job.
Thank you.
You will go far based on this win. Ben, hang on for a second. Make sure you get all that stuff. Thanks for playing.
Thank you.
What? You want Town of the Week? You ready?
I'm ready for Town of the Week.
Well, you know, each week of this week or no weeks or some never week. Hardly ever do it, really. This week we're doing it, though. Town of the Week. And here is Sarah Niggs.
Farmington, Maine is our town of the week. It's the seat of Franklin County, Maine.
Farmington.
Yeah, it was once part of the territory of the Kanabis Indians. Non-native settlers moved in around 1780, focusing on logging and agriculture.
Farmington.
The population swelled as Farmington's role in manufacturing and agriculture bloomed. In 1879, the town became the southern terminus for the narrow gauge Sandy River Railroad.
Oh, narrow gauge.
Yeah. Farmington's now home to about 8,000 people. The University of Maine has a campus there, and throughout the year you can see the UMF Beavers play. The great American soprano, Lillian Nordica, was born...
What league are they in, the Beavers?
I really have no idea.
Okay.
The great American soprano, Lillian Nordica, was born in Farmington. Seth Westcott, the 2006 and 2010 Olympic gold medalist in snowboard cross, I'm not sure what that event actually means, is also from Farmington.
Wow.
And so are earmuffs. Farmington native Chester Greenwood invented earmuffs in 1873 when he was only 15 years old. Okay. I think he was out ice skating or something. Hmm. He called them ear protectors and made a fortune supplying them to U.S. soldiers in World War
I. No kidding.
Yeah. Farmington celebrates Mr. Greenwood and his greatest invention with a parade on the first Saturday of December every year. Visitors to Farmington can ski Titcomb Mountain, fly fish on some of Maine's best trout streams, or play around at the Sandy River Golf Course. There's an outstanding secondhand clothes store on Farmington's Broadway. Outskirts is a great stop for hand-embroidered cardigans, old hunting jackets, bake-like bangles, and I once bought a red polka dot Diane von Furstenberg dress there.
No kidding.
Yeah, and that's our town of the week, Farmington, Maine.
Oh, you like that? How did the Diane von Furstenberg get to Farmington? How do you think it got there?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Maybe a New York student carried it up there?
I suppose, yeah. They go up there, don't they? Yeah. A lot of those New Yorkers are up there.
Yeah.
Mostly New Yorkers now, isn't it, probably?
Probably, yeah. Maine's been overrun.
Yeah, by New Yorkers. Okay. Right now, Lyle, who you heard earlier, worrying about the ice on the lake or not, is calling randomly to Farmington. Can't be too random. It's only 8,000, right?
That's right.
Okay. And... meanwhile, you had some good times in Farmington. Name one.
I did. I have some friends in Farmington.
Yeah. What's the best time you had in Farmington?
Well, when I was partially employed after I graduated from university, some friends and I did what we called Surrealist Children's Theater for Elderly Listeners.
Oh.
Yeah. So we'd go into small towns and...
I've done that.
Yeah. See? I think we do that every Saturday, actually.
Yeah, so more or less. Yeah. Exactly. You got it.
Yeah. Yeah, so we used
big
to...
Big one for you.
We used to go into these empty mill buildings and do odd performances. We had a bass player and a ballet dancer.
Was there an audience of elderly people?
Yeah, and sometimes some young people, and yeah, it was... And we had a potluck. It was kind of like the Christmas show, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a little bit chaotic and...
Oh, so you did all the dancing and...
Yeah.
Cavorting.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah, it was
good.
Pretty fun.
Oh, we got some Melanie's online now from Farmington, Maine, our town of the week, and let's say hello to Melanie. Hi, Melanie. Hi, Melanie. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Did you happen to hear Sarah Niggs, who's been in Farmington many a time?
I did. I heard a little bit of it.
And heard her description. Anything you want to add to that maybe she didn't include or you'd like to?
Oh, sure. It was funny because this is actually the public library, Farmington Public Library, which is... a very beautiful old building built around the turn of the century, last century. And we had a lobby full of people when you called, and everyone was very excited about this.
Oh.
So they were shouting things out about what makes Farmington a great place to live.
And what did they shout out?
One person shouted out the trails.
That
it's just a great place for the outdoors.
Okay.
We have a narrow gauge railroad bed that's been converted into this fantastic skiing four-season trail, system that goes, you know, 20 miles into the next communities, mm-hmm. Which is fantastic.
What is the next community over from Farmington?
Wilson.
Oh, Wilson. Okay.
Yeah.
All the way to Wilson.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So.
What else did they shout?
They shouted out Lillian Nordica, who was a famous opera singer many, many years ago, but there's lots of little places around here. There's the Lillian Nordica Homestead and Nordica Auditorium at the University of Maine, Farmington.
Oh, okay.
So we're very much an artist's community.
Mm-hmm. Anything else they shouted out?
Soup.
Maybe they were hungry when
all
this was going.
We have a fantastic little soup restaurant downtown that was just recently featured in Down East Magazine,
uh-huh.
And it's great. I eat there almost every day. So.
What's special about the soup there?
Well, they usually have 6 or 7 different kinds every day,
mm-hmm.
and like yesterday, I had a fantastic chicken cilantro bisque.
Sounds good.
Yeah, they're really just great.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have great kayaking. We're very historically significant. We have.
I'm sorry, you're historically significant.
we are very historically significant
in terms of history.
Yes.
What happened in Farmington?
Well, the cool thing about Farmington is that our history has really been preserved well since mm-hmm. like the 1780s. So Stephen Titcomb, who started the community, the Historical Society actually has the burlap sack that he carried his belongings to Farmington 200 years ago. So we have
his burlap sack.
Yep, they certainly do.
This is the Titcomb burlap sack.
The Titcomb burlap sack.
Wow, that's something to have.
One of the local historians calls it his Samsonite.
He's amusing.
Yeah, very, very.
Where did he carry it from, Titcomb?
It was over on the coast. He moved from the coast up here, and it's a very interesting, harrowing story about how he, you know, snowshoed 100 miles from the coast so that he could come to Farmington and settle the area.
Was he fleeing something, or was he coming to something?
No, they were settling the area.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they were settling it. It's a great place to live, so obviously he wanted to come here.
Yeah, fascinating. Well, we picked the right person, Melanie. Thank you for that. It's short, but it's a good overview of Farmington and its many attributes, so thank you for that. We have a little something for you.
We'll be sending you the pride of America's Dairyland in a scrumptious selection of 10 premium certified organic cheeses and butters from Lafarge, Wisconsin's Organic Valley family of farms.
Wonderful.
Now, any idea how that Oscar De La Renta got into the shop there?
No idea.
Okay. Well, let me know. Get back to me on that one, will you? I'm curious. Thank you, Melanie. Town of the Week, Farmington, Maine.
Tickets are still available for our next What Do You Know shows in Madison on January 19th, January 26th, February 2nd, and February 9th at Monona Terrace. Tickets are limited for our next road show, which is at the Shower Center in Hartford, Wisconsin, so get yours today at notmuch.com. And if you're looking to keep the laughs going, click over to notmuch.com. You can join our Facebook family, keep up with Michael's tweets, and play our online quiz.
How do you do that, the tweet thing?
Well, your handle is @MyFeldman, so they would have to sign up for Twitter.
And follow me.
Follow you.
Follow.
Yeah, and either, so you can find Michael either on Twitter or all the time at notmuch.com. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio for Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international. Adam Friedrich, producer, with assistance from Michelle Good, Lyle Anderson, Martin Babcock, and Diana Cook. Technical director is Tom Blaine, with help from Aubrey Ralph and Brad Kohlberg.
Thank you all for joining us here. Thanks for listening. Talk to you again next week.
PRI, Public Radio International.